With these words, I thought I had finished what I had to say, but I was wrong. Apparently, it was only an introduction. Glorkin is an extremely determined character in everything he does, and on this occasion he refused to accept Thrasymachus's surrender. "Socrates," he said, "do you really want to convince us that it is in every way better to be just than unjust, or is it enough merely to seem to have convinced us?" "I would prefer," I said, "really to convince you, if I had a choice." "In that case," he said, "you are not achieving your aim. Tell me this. Do you think there is a good of the kind we would choose to have because we value it for its own sake, and not from any desire for its results? Enjoyment, for example, and pleasures which are harmless and produce no consequences for the future beyond enjoyment for the person who possesses them." "Yes," I said, "I do think there is a good of this kind." "What about the sort we value both for itself and for its consequences, things like intelligence and sight and health? We value goods of this sort, I imagine, for both reasons." "Yes," I said. "And can you distinguish a third class or category of good," he asked, "a class which contains physical exercise, undergoing medical treatment when we are ill, practicing medicine, and earning a living in general? These we would describe as unpleasant but beneficial. We would not choose to have them for their own sakes, but only for the payment or other benefits which result from them." "Yes," I said, "there is this third class as well. What of it?" "In which of these classes," he asked, "do you put justice?" "In my opinion," I replied, "it is in the best class, the class which is to be valued by anyone who wants to be happy, both for itself and for its consequences." "That's not what most people think," he said. "Most people would put it in the unpleasant class, which we should cultivate in return for payment and reputation on account of public opinion, but which purely for itself is to be avoided like the plague." "I know that's what they think," I said. "Thrasymachus criticised it and praised injustice on those grounds some while back. But I'm a slow learner, apparently." "Well," he said, "listen to me as well and see if you agree with what I suggest. I think Thrasymachus too readily allowed himself to be bewitched by you, like a snake being charmed by a snake charmer. As far as I'm concerned, the proof is not yet convincing, either for justice or injustice. I want to be told what each of them is, and what effect it has just by itself, when it is present in the soul. I want to forget about the rewards and results it brings. So here's what I'm going to do, if you've no objection. I'm going to revive Thrasymachus's definition. First, I shall say what kind of thing people reckon justice is, and how they think it arises. Secondly, I shall claim that all those who practice it do so as something unavoidable, against their will, and not because they regard it as a good. Thirdly, I shall say that this is a rational way for them to behave, since the unjust man, in their view, has a much better life than the just man. These are not my own opinions, Socrates, but I'm going to make the most powerful speech I can in defence of the unjust life, and I want to hear you, in your turn, criticising injustice and defending justice. There you are. See if you approve of my suggestion."
"I'd like nothing better," I replied.
"That's good," he said.